This is Phil Farron.
Just a second.
And I am driving home. Okay, I have a new recorder. We'll see how this goes. I did do a test with it and it seemed to be working, so that's good. I just need to stop the podcast that's about to come up. And so we'll see how this goes. It's fancy. So this one is not just a two-track recorder, it's actually a six-track recorder, and it cost me half as much. And I had done some research, and they seem to say this Tascam Porta something, Porta, I'm telling you, when I see the prefix Porta, all I think is porta potty, but it's not that. It's Porta something, Porta Recorder something, X6, but it got high reviews and stuff, so we're going to give this a try. I was able to do a test and get it offloaded and listen to it. Seemed to be fine. So anyways, it was time to move up. I'd been using that other recorder for 15 years, I think. And so, you know, things come to an end. Anyways, so there we go. Let's just see how this works. Let me just check and make sure that this didn't stop for some reason when I put it down on the foam. I have this little foam pad that I put on my dashboard, and that way we make sure that it's okay. So let's see. Yes, we're still running. Great. I was hoping this had a remote control on it. The best I could find, supposedly, was a Bluetooth interface that cost another $50 just for the Bluetooth interface that kept coming up when I said I wanted to record. That seemed a little steep, so I'm back to starting the recorder and then putting it down on the foam pad. I am heading home. I will have to sign off very quickly after I get home because I have to go grab Aiden and then get back to the house, and we've got small groups and etc., 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 and I need to race in and see if I can assist my wife in any way before we do the small group thing. I think this will be the third time that I haven't been available to moderate the small group stuff. And when I told my wife, yep, got Aiden this week, she went, okay. And, but you know, it is what it is. I think she likes it when I do the moderator, and she prefers just to listen. So, but hey, you know, at least I can get home and get the notes printed out. And then we'll go from there. And maybe Dustin will get off at the right time and, you know, we'll get picked up. But if he doesn't, he doesn't. So, you know, it's okay. We're working it out. And God's been good. Dustin did have a new partner he was starting with today that he was looking forward with because he had worked with this person before, really enjoyed working with this person. And so I'm hoping he had a great day today. As far as costume stuff goes, I'm still not done with my Halloween costume, but I'm getting closer, and I have a jabot I need to make. That's a big, massive jabot, which is what started all this thing in the first place. And so I can get that made, and then I have some top extensions I need to manufacture for the boots that I have so that it will look more like Puss in Boots' boots. And then aside from that, a little bit of tweaking here and there, and Halloween's ready to go. And then I've got to get back. I've got to get back on the time traveler costume. A buddy of mine gave me a cell phone to use. I had bought a $60 cell phone from Temu, and it actually looks like it works. It is 3G, but
I just need it.
I just need it to play video. So I think I'll be able to make that do that. I have to test that once I get the Halloween costume taken care of. But it looks like it will do it. It plays YouTube videos, so that's good. And then when I was talking to a buddy, he said, well, I've got an old cell phone around here somewhere. And he found an old original Pixel, Google Pixel phone. And so he said, you can have it if you want it. I went, okay. So now I have two cell phones to play video on, which is, I'll put those on the gauntlets for my arms. And I've got some video that I can play on them. And it's just that kind of standard heads-up display, futuristic blue screens that have things moving around, and etc., etc. So that should be good. And I've got already the LED lights in and the chips to program that stuff, and I've watched the videos, and it all seems pretty straightforward. So once I get through the Halloween costume, I'll have about 5 weeks, 6 weeks to get the time traveler costume done, and I think I can get it done in that amount of time. Because it's mainly just assembling. I don't have to build too much. We'll see. Writing is going fine. I let slip my 10,000 words last week because we were moving some stuff and taking care of some stuff, and so I was a couple of thousand words up, and so I think I got within 1,000 words, and I just kind of let the rest of it slip.
Which is fine.
Because I got started so early with this book, because the cover took so much less time, I was already up a couple of weeks, so we'll be fine. And very rapidly here, the next book is the 23 is actually my time should open up, because I'm working on 22 now. We only go to 24, so I'm on 22 now. If I can get through 22 on time, I start writing 23 in April of next year. I get the first half done, but then when I'm going into the second half, I will go to halftime probably in July or August of next year, and then I've got so much more time, it's not going to be any problem to get 23 and 24 put out. So this 22 is actually the one that I got to buckle down and just get this done. But I've got a couple extra weeks in here, and so if I can get to 90,000 words on the first half of book 22, then when I go to the back half of it, it's going to be easier. So that's all looking fine. So I think we're good. I think we're good. It's going to be fine. And I have plenty to write about, I think. I think I know where this book is going, and I just have to decide.
Excuse me.
I have to decide how dramatic this needs to be, but I think I've got stuff to fill things up. So I've got a, yeah. Gotta decide. But we'll get there. It'll be fine. So that's all good. I, last week, talked about Casey and Callie Means. They are brother and sister. They're not husband and wife, by the way. Brother and sister. Really a fascinating story. And one of the things they were stressing over and over in their podcast with Joe Rogan was the fact that when you look at the individuals who are involved with these catastrophes, like making food that is terrible for human health, and what that's doing to our nation, and when you look at the profit focus that the pharmaceutical companies seem to have, that, you know, yes, let's give Ozempic to six-year-old children. You know, when you look at the lobbyists and the congressmen and senators that are pushing this and then actually voting for this, that everyone thinks, well, most of them think, there are some people that have to see what's going on. Most of them think that they're just doing the best they can for their constituents, for their customers, for their et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because they justify things like Ozempic for six-year-olds by saying, well, I mean, you know, that obesity is such a problem. If we can free them of being obese as they're growing up, their lives are just going to be so much better, so much better, that this, we should pay for this as a government, $1,600 a month. And they don't realize that they're medicalizing those children for the rest of their lives. They don't, because that's not what they've been told. And so what Casey and Callie were stressing was the fact that everybody thinks they're doing a good job. And yet, 50% of our children are obese. And, you know, X number of adults in this country are medicalized. We're on SSRIs. We're on all kinds of stuff is happening where it's obvious that the general population of the United States is not well. We are not well. Period. So, what you see in that is the old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Everybody thinks they're doing a good job, but the outcome is terrible. And I ran across a story this week that I just thought, well, there you go. Here's another story of that happening. And I came across it, I was on a YouTube feed, and I was watching something about RFK Jr., and it popped up next in the list, and it is a video that is on RFK Jr.'s YouTube channel, and I heartily recommend it. It's called The Pipeline Deception. And it's a fascinating story of nobody taking responsibility for what the outcome is. They all just have their little pieces they're doing. And the whole thing is turning into this giant boondoggle with the potential to cause serious, serious harm. So, how this gets started, well, that's not how it gets started. The latest incarnation of what's making this explode at this point is the fact that in one of the Biden bills that got approved, you've got so many billions of dollars that have been set aside to help sequester carbon, because that's going to be the solution. If we sequester carbon dioxide, that will be part of the solution for climate change. And we really need to do something about climate change, despite all the uncertainties in climate change. Well, one of the ways they decide to do that is by running carbon dioxide pipelines. And what we're going to do is we're going to take this carbon dioxide and we're going to ship it out of the state and ship it someplace else. And in this case, it's North Dakota. And the reason we're shipping it to North Dakota is because then they can take it out of their pipeline and they can push it down into the ground to get the last bit of oil out of the ground. They push it under pressure down into the fracking wells to get the last bit of oil out of there. And they supposedly kill two birds with one stone. So they get to sequester the carbon dioxide way down in these wells, or in the fracking the wells that they've drilled, and then they get more oil out. So it's a win-win, except I can't remember exactly what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was talking about, but there is some problem with the way they're doing this, that the carbon dioxide may be escaping, so it's not really all getting sequestered. But that's not really what this little blurb was about. The blurb was about the manufacturing of these pipelines, the creation of these pipelines, and all the pieces that are involved, and how they could all be done better. And so the video is about Iowa and what's going on in Iowa right now, because I think what it was is Iowa had some industry, probably it's the fertilizer industry. It creates a lot of CO2, and so the industry needs to get some credits somehow so that they can offset how much carbon dioxide that they're producing, so, you know, they don't get sued or they don't get charged a lot of money. So according to the people who talk about this, they refer to this pipeline thing, which is carbon dioxide being pumped through pipelines to get the carbon dioxide someplace else so that it can be sequestered. And it transports CO2, and as it says in the story, it's all about power, control, and greed, money, billions and billions of dollars. So there's 90,000 miles of CO2 pipeline projected for the United States, and you better get out of the way. And specifically, they were talking about in Iowa, the farmlands, and how that the people who are constructing these pipelines just decided where they wanted these pipelines to go. And then they just started sending letters to all these farmers saying, yeah, we need an easement on your land and we'll pay you up front for all of it, but we really need this easement done. And they were really kind of strong-arming these farmers. And one of the people, he was some sort of official, was talking about this. He said, normally a big project like this, they sit down with you, you know, months if not years in advance. They learn about your ordinances. You know, they talk to you with concerns about where would be a good place to go or not go, how we can work together on that. He said, I don't know if the outcome would have been any different, but he said, there was never any discussion about that. Basically, they had the feeling that it was the done deal because there was billions of dollars available in grants. They had made their proposals, they'd got their grants, done. So they just started sending out these letters like, yeah, we're going right through your farm and we need an easement. And the easement was for whatever, 100 feet wide, and they were gonna dig down 50 feet and then bury these carbon pipelines 50 feet down, cover it all up. It was like, yeah, and then, you know, it'll all be done and you won't have to worry about it. And everything's great. That was the story. So first of all, the farmers are concerned because they're like, okay, so farmlands, the soil is a living thing. It has a mixture of all kinds of stuff in it, and you just don't go in and tear that all up and then just kind of dump it back in the hole and not expect there to be a consequence for that. And so, you know, but a lot of the people got these letters and they weren't quite sure what was, and there was money involved, and they just signed the letters, and then people just start showing up, you know, coming on their land anytime they want to because they've signed their rights away for this easement, and just start tearing their land up. One farmer said, so They're laying the pipeline directly across the middle of our farm, making this big ditch. And they said, so in other words, when we go to plant, you know, it's going to cut straight through our farm, and we're not going to be able to plant like the other side of our farm because there's this huge pipeline ditch in the way. And so, yeah, it's not great, but you think, well, but, you know, it's going to help take care of the carbon. Isn't that a good thing? I'm getting my mail. One moment. So, you know, there's just all of that, but what they failed to mention, because, you know, the engineers have looked at it, and the engineers say it's all just hunky-dory fine, you know, because this project will just, you won't even think about it in the future. Except, no one kind of stops and thinks about the fact that carbon dioxide is highly corrosive at the pressures that they're putting into the pipeline. And it's somewhere, I forget how many thousands of PSI, because they want to get the pipeline up to that level of pressure, because at that level of pressure, carbon dioxide turns into a liquid, but it still has the characteristics of a gas, so it's easy to push through the pipeline. And you can push a lot of volume through the pipeline, which is what they want. So, actually, we're having small groups tonight, and I should probably park my car someplace else so that someone can come up on the pad on our driveway. Let me turn around here. So you got this pipeline now going through, and this pipeline has all this carbon dioxide. And in other places where they've done this, they've started running this carbon dioxide through the pipes at this really high pressure level. This really high, highly corrosive gas. Yeah. And let me get to the spot where they talk about one of the accidents that they've had. And there's been more than just one accident. I forget how many, 15 accidents in the last so many years. But when the accident happens, it's quite the deal. And if you just wanted to go to the pipeline deception on Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s site, and you wanted to hear them talk about what happens when this goes wrong, it starts at minute 9 and 50 seconds. So at 9 and 50 seconds, they start talking about this. And what they said is this, is all we heard was a boom like an explosion, and a big mushroom cloud went up in the air. And the reason is, when this pipeline goes and releases all that carbon dioxide, as it escapes from the ground, is freezing all the water around it. And so you have this big plume that's being pushed up into the air of this stuff. And I called my mother and I said, Mama, this pipeline blew up and we're on our way to get, we're on our way up there to get y'all, and we never made it. And the reason that they never made it is if you come across that cloud of carbon dioxide, which is heavier than air, and so it's going to hug the ground. So it's going to hug the ground and start rolling across the ground. And if you happen to be downhill of this cloud, it's going to settle into a low spot, and you drive your car into that, and your car is going to stall out. Your car will not run because it's not going to get any oxygen for the spark. And then the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to get short of breath, and you might start vomiting, and you might start blacking out, because a 10% concentration, I think, of oxygen or of carbon dioxide will kill you. It just absolutely will kill you. So you've got to, trying to get responders in the area, but nobody, you can't see it. And like one of the sheriffs said, as soon as he got within like 1500 feet, I think it was the sheriff, his car just dies. And, you know, people are trying to get out. They're trying to, eventually like 45 people were injured. I don't think anyone died, thankfully, but 45 people were injured. I think it was the sheriff said that he was driving his truck around trying to get to people, and he saw people just like wandering through their yard, and he's hollering at them, and he said it looked like the zombie apocalypse. And the problem was that they had had a lot of rain, and the ground had shifted, and it had torqued the pipe and actually cracked the pipe open. You know, there's a lot of rain in Iowa, and the same conditions are going to happen there. They said that the engineers did look at all this stuff, and you know, they did run the safety analysis of it, but they hadn't necessarily remembered that they should possibly factor in weather, or they should factor in hilly terrain. They just said, oh yeah, it's like, you know, soda pop, can of soda pop, you know, you popped in, of course the carbon dioxide dissipates, but it just dissipates and it's fine, except it's not fine. And so what you have here is that all along the way, you have people that are checking stuff and they're doing their diligence, but they're not really paying attention to a lot of details because they're getting paid to do this and sign off on it. And there's billions of dollars here and sure. And this guy gets money for this easement going across. And this is, and no one is telling them, oh yeah, you might be out plowing in your field, and if that pipeline torques and goes, you better hope you're nowhere in the vicinity of that thing when it happens, because it will kill you. Would people have signed easements if they were told, yeah, you know, this carbon dioxide, if it gets cracked, it might pool and you won't even see it and then you're dead. I don't think anyone told them that, because they had run all their analysis and shown that, no, it's fine, it's fine. And even though we have more experience now to say it's not fine, well, there's billions of dollars and people just keep telling themselves it's fine. And all the people who are involved in all these things just nod and go along because each of them have convinced themselves that it's fine. And then you get these massive projects funded by the government that probably could never have gotten off the ground just in a free market system. But because the government is stepping in to solve the climate crisis, yeah, now we're installing tens of thousands of these pipelines all over America. And how many accidents are there going to have to be? And who's ever going to go in and tear those out? Or when enough people die, are they just going to quit using them? Or when we finally stop being silly and start using nuclear fission to power? Or if they can actually get nuclear fusion going, or if we end up with better batteries and we end up with better solar cells and we can actually have a green revolution, and it won't matter if we're producing carbon dioxide, you know, there will be such a drop that it'll be fine. There's many other ways things could be solved without building pipes with highly pressurized carbon dioxide that stands the chance of blowing out of pipelines, the dangers of which were just ignored because there was so much money to be made. But each person in this chain justified everything to themselves, said no, they were doing a good job, But when there is one of these accidents, you got people wandering around like they're in a zombie apocalypse and they're foaming at the mouth and they're keeling over and their cars won't run. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.